Hello again, and welcome to Crime and Music. I'm your host, Brian J. Kinsley, and with me, as always, my friend Ben Rubel.
Sad day in the podcast studio here, Brian.
Why is this?
You just cracked a beer, and I'm not having any 7-Ups.
I'm drinking Mexican light beers today.
You got a little schmutz from your beer on the back of your mic.
Nobody cleans the mics. Just remember that, everybody.
Yeah, that's why we got to have a separate one for butt mic.
Anytime you go to a karaoke thing, just go, who cleans these? Just ask the guy.
Nobody.
Give me an answer.
Nope, nobody. All right, Brian's drinking a beer.
Every other Wednesday, this man and I bring you a true crime podcast about people in and around the music business and their misadventures in lawbreaking. We have social medias. You can find us Twitter, Instagram. A lot of people have been commenting on the YouTube. That's the number one research platform outside. Well, number two research platform outside of Google. Did you know that by statistics?
Oh, I bet. I use YouTube for a lot of things. When I know I need a video, bam, I just go to YouTube first, plug it in my YouTube search.
I pretty much have done most of the DIY around here that I don't know. Like, I've burst a boiler pipe and things like that. I look it up on the YouTubes.
Oh, I've done all sorts of mechanical work on my vehicles with YouTube.
Fixing my car, because you can type in specifically your make, model, and year of your car, and some dude's like, hey, this is how you change the alternator.
And it works.
And it A to B, man.
At least it gives you an idea whether you should be monkeying around with it.
Right. So go to YouTubes, guys. You're there anyway. Look us up, Crime and Music, on the YouTube.
Yeah, we got a couple people now helping us out fact-checking on YouTube.
Definitely do have some fact-checkers.
Want to keep that up? That's awesome.
Right on.
We got thick skin. Tell us how stupid we are. Listen, I got people in my life every day telling me, yeah, I can take it.
You have heard that a lot, I'm guessing.
How stupid I am? A lot of times when I'm driving, people are yelling, they're telling me how to drive, or how to drive differently anyways, or telling me what I'm doing wrong. A lot of times they're right. You're going the wrong way around this roundabout. Huh, I thought it was a choice.
It's a left or right? I needed to go left.
I got to get to that one, though. How do I get? Oh, you go around
it's a circle.
About.
It's a revolution. Keeps coming back
going
around in your face.
Roundabout.
Tommy Lee Jones.
You ever listen to Yes?
Yes.
All right.
No, wait, I'm confirming. That's the band you're asking me about?
Yes. Who's on Yes?
The Yes Festival. We should cover that.
The Yes? Is it about Yes?
Yes.
I do not want to cover that. I hate that band. I'm a big Rush fan.
Yes.
It's amazing if I love Rush and hate Yes. Whatever.
The, we could get into them.
The Thes?
No, just the.
The band?
The band also.
All right.
Yes. Well, let's start on this one, because you're going to have to guess who this is. Because
guess
it's not,
who?
It's not the guess who. It's not the who. It's not the.
All right. Now, go ahead.
Are you ready? All right. If you want to know
now,
that.
Brian was very excited about this episode, everybody. I want to let you. And here, I don't think he's excited for him.
Nope.
He's excited for me.
I'm excited for Ben.
And I feel like he's. I still don't know who it is, of course.
Oh, you'll have no idea who this is.
But he's so excited, and I feel like he's setting me up to let me down, man.
Very excited to tell you about this. Are you ready to guess the guest?
Yeah, I'm ready.
She is known as the Queen of Shock Rock.
The Queen of Shock Rock.
Queen of Shock Rock.
All right, Freddie Mercury?
Not quite.
All right.
That's Queen and Stadium Rock.
Ah, okay.
She's also known as the Metal Priestess.
Lita Ford.
Ooh, you're in the zone, but just a little too far down the road.
Okay.
She's also known as the Dominatrix of Decibels.
Let's go with Tina Fey. No, Tina Turner.
That's not a bad guess, but this girl's
not
a little...
Shock Rock.
Yeah, this is a little more rocky rock.
Not Lita Ford. Do I know her?
Nope. Well, I mean, I don't know. It depends on what you know about the music scene of the 70s in New York.
Zero.
Yeah, it kind of harkens back to our Sid Vicious episode.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, a little bit of that stuff. Right. I don't know if your dad got you into, like, you know, some of the punk stuff and punk hard rock stuff of the 70s.
No, I think I'm going to have a tough time with this one. I may have heard of her, but I don't think I'm going to be able to name a name here.
Well, here we are. Have you ever heard of Wendy O. Williams?
Wendy Williams, yeah. I watch your daytime talk show all the time.
Different Wendy O. Williams.
All right, no.
No, all right, that's the answer. The answer is Wendy O. Williams of the Plasmatics. That's a punk rock group that comes around in the 70s, and we will get there.
Okay, Wendy Williams. I have a good friend who's big time into classic punk rock and current punk and a little metal.
This could go very badly then.
No, I bet he I'm gonna have to tag him up on this episode on the Facebooks.
Absolutely.
So he can listen to it.
May 28th, 1949.
And he can fact check everything for us because he knows his shit.
I've been checking. We'll see how I do.
All right. You do good, Brian. Brian, you do very good. Everybody, pat Brian on the back. He does very good.
Yay, that hurts. Webster, New York, USA. Wendy O. Williams is born May 28th, 1949, to parents Robert F. Williams and Audrey Stauber Williams.
So the O is a middle name?
Yeah, Orlean.
Okay, it's not O apostrophe Williams,
no,
like O'Rourke or
Wendy,
O'Malley's.
Her actual initials are WOW, W-O-W, Wendy Orlean Williams.
Orlean.
Wow.
Orlean. Right.
Why'd you have to come and take my man? Her dad was a chemist at Eastman Kodak.
Oh, okay.
Rich kid.
Yeah.
Rich kid. Wendy really liked the clarinet. She played the clarinet. She studied at the local community college even as a kid because they had a good kids program.
For clarinets?
For clarinets.
Okay.
At the age of 6, Wendy appeared on the Howdy Doody show.
Howdy Doody.
It's Howdy Doody time.
Yeah, that's what it was.
She tap danced, and she was part of the Peanut Gallery. If you remember, they had a group of kids who would kind of sit by stage.
I mean,
it was way before my time. They had a group of kids who would sit like the audience sort of section that they would show on the show, and they were called the Peanut Gallery, and they did stuff. You know,
hey, you see that Mr. Rogers movie coming out with Tom Hanks?
I saw that.
Yeah.
Well, that seems good.
Let's see.
Wendy gets kicked out of her brownie troupe.
Brian just blew that.
I don't know anything about it. What are they doing? Are they making it because he was like just
they're making
the story of
Mr.
Rogers? Yeah, right. It's not like he was a serial killer and then they're like, oh, nobody ever knew.
No, I think he was a good guy from day one. He diddled very little amount of kids.
I'm assuming none, or else we would have heard about it by now.
Well, the story's not been told yet.
Well, speaking of inappropriate behavior, Wendy gets kicked out of her brownie troop because one time on a canoe trip, she was flirting with some boys.
Woo! How old?
Well, she's 6, 8, 10, somewhere in there.
Flirting with boys. It's called just being a friend.
Flirting with boys.
You can't flirt with boys at a young.
No, and I guarantee you the brownies were not on a canoe trip, because my wife complains about the brownies today, how they didn't do anything outdoors or adventurous.
They might have back then, though. That's the same thing with Boy Scouts. They just don't do the same stuff
that's true. That's true. I guess it was like the 50s.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Remember, she liked playing the clarinet.
Mm-hmm.
So she
remember that.
She gets onto her high school's concert band, plays the clarinet at R.L. Thompson High School in Webster, New York.
Okay.
Teachers and classmates recall Wendy as the shy and pretty girl.
Shy and pretty girl on the clarinet.
She paid attention to her hair and clothes, and she spoke so softly you'd have to lean in to hear her.
Hey, which one's the clarinet?
It's the Jason from Chicago.
It's long and it's like a big flute, but it has buttons like a saxophone.
Yeah, it's like a saxophone, but straight, and they're usually made of wood and they're black.
And they have a reed.
Correct.
And they don't have holes. They have buttons that cover holes, right?
Some are holes and some are buttons. It's both, I think.
Okay.
So she was good at that. She played a little saxophone too.
Saxophone.
Age 15, we kick it off. 1964, Wendy gets arrested for.
Age 15?
Yup.
Drugs, alcohol.
Sunbathing nude.
I was going to say boobies.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Just to give you perspective, she's about 5'10", 110. Why is my mic dropping?
Oh, it's going
to
do it again. You got these things on here.
Oh, no.
Uh-oh, hurry. Oh, I lost it.
I got him.
What's
I got
going?
Him. I got him. We're
right.
Good. We're good.
Technical difficulties
always
are part of the show. It's like our third personality.
That's what we do.
They're still happening.
Hey, oh, my God. What's happening now?
Things. All right.
I think we're clear.
All right.
The road ahead looks good.
If not, just bear with us, folks.
Oh, I'll probably edit this like I always
don't edit. People want the wholesome feeling of two idiots sitting in a basement screwing up. People want that. That's what people
want. That's what they want. We'll
don't overproduce this, Brian.
Speaking of what people want, I don't know why it's here, but we have Wendy's measurements.
Apparently, the police report was very detailed.
5'10", 110 pounds, 38,
24, 34. What?
38.
I don't know what those numbers are.
24. 38's the boobies, 24 is the waist, and 34 is the hips.
I is that good?
36, 24, 36, only if she's 5'3".
I'm okay. Let's just say
going workout
awesome.
Tapes by Fonda. Got a motor in the back of that Honda.
And I kind of don't want no.
We
had a speak
buns,
pipe
son.
Say all this, didn't we?
Yes, we did.
All right.
Partway through the 10th grade, Wendy quits and leaves school.
She apparently didn't need school. She had 28, 34, 97.
Well, yeah, but this was years before Sir Mix-a-Lot was picking up girls on the streets.
So
like
was
that.
She a curvy girl?
No, basically she just had really good shape to her and big boobies.
Okay. That's well,
this will come back around.
Okay.
Age 16, 1965. Wendy leaves home for Colorado. Mm. Why? Kay. You ask?
No, I didn't ask that.
All right. She said it was a repressive household. Quote, I'd rather be dead.
Or go to Colorado. Big shout out to Colorado.
And how did she get to Colorado at age 16? That's correct. And then when she got there, she camped in a tent.
Yeah, that's what you do in Colorado.
Odd jobs Wendy would do, she would crochet bikinis to sell for money.
And those in the 60s?
Correct.
Yeah, that seems about right.
She also hitched Florida, where she worked for a lifeguard. Well, not worked.
Worked for a lifeguard.
She also hitched to Florida, where she worked as a lifeguard, and she sold vitamins on the beach.
Vitamin C.
That's what it said.
I bet it was vitamin C for the hippie tabs.
She went off to Europe after a little while. She worked as a macrobiotic cook in London.
What in the F is a macrobiotic cook?
It's based on the pescatarian diet also Zen Buddhism balance of food and cookware.
So what you're telling me is they had stupid diets back then, too.
Yes, they did.
Okay.
Wendy was also a dancer with a gypsy dance troupe. She's a topless dancer and stripper also. She had an act where she danced around a 6-foot Buddha that they called original.
Naked?
Eh.
Is any of this on YouTube?
Yeah. You're going to like Wendy Williams.
All right.
At one point, she was a server at a Dunkin' Donuts.
Dunkin' Donuts.
She also studied with a guru in the Himalayas.
This girl has a little bit of the traveling pants thing going on here.
Exactly.
Or traveling no pants.
Around this time, Wendy was arrested multiple times for...
drugs.
Shoplifting and passing counterfeit money.
Because she needed to buy drugs.
No drugs.
Well...
we'll get there.
Oh, there better be drugs.
1976, age 27, Wendy moves back to New York, to New York City this time. She stays at Times Square Hotel, right down there in the scene, kind of, you know, where we were talking about Sid Vicious and Nancy. And
so in a very short amount of time, she's traveled the stinking world and done a crazy amount of weird jobs.
Yeah, in 10 years, she's traveled more and done more than I've done in 40 years.
Or will ever do.
Probably.
Yeah.
She's in the Port Authority bus terminal, right?
Uh-huh.
She's walking along. She sees a show business magazine laying on the ground. It's open to a page that has an ad for a casting call.
I feel like if there was ever a movie made for her right after the montage, this would be the scene to bring it out of the montage.
You think?
She's, you know, just kind of staggering through a old bus depot and just happens to look down and she bends over, maybe not at the hips, but at the knees. Bends with the knees,
bends
I think.
Bends with the knees.
I'm picturing she's got like a mini dress on. And an old shirt and one of those kind of fur coats that only go down halfway to the midriff. Her hair is a mess. Fishnet stockings, of course. I don't think I had to say that. And she bends over and she kind of picks it up and she looks at it. And then the camera pans into her face where she gets this 1,000-mile stare, a long-distance look to her. And then the next thing you know, she's like in a limo popping bottles.
I love how detailed that is.
Yeah.
It's where were we
nighttime.
At here?
Nighttime, New York City Port Authority bus station.
All right, so she's looking at this ad, right? And it's a casting call for people to, like, perform in an art show kind of thing. There's this radical artist, this guy Rod Swenson. He's a Yale University grad.
Sounds like a creeper already.
Yeah, well, he's got a Master of Fine Arts degree in conceptual performance and neo-Dadaist art.
Dadaist just getting
art.
Creepier, man.
You know, Dadaist art. And he wanted people to be in his experimental Captain Kink's theater.
This is a sex cult.
Wendy replied to the ad. Started performing live sex shows the very next week. She was a dominatrix, and she would act out scripted sex scenes live.
Like, really? Real banging?
Yeah. From what it reads like.
It's not legal. You can't do that.
It depends on the art. You know what I mean? It's an
art
show. The art.
Because okay. Well, Ben's story coming in here. Sorry. Put your cards down for a second. So I think I might have told this story. There was this back, I had the job of traveling and sales and working with people and trying to make them buy things they didn't need. Salesman. And one of the ways you do that with dudes is take them to the strip club. Well, I hated going to these things, too. I mean, not because I was against it.
Yeah, you hated it.
No, it was... It became sad, and not just sad for the poor women out there, but sad for me. I was just like, enough. But there's this one, I don't know if it's still there, there's this one place in Cleveland, It was a strip club, and their laws in Ohio are such that they can be topless and not have alcohol. Or, no, they can be topless and have alcohol. Brian's looking some stuff up on his phone.
Well, I'm just letting you know that Wendy was never topless. We'll get there, but her nipples were covered in just about everything she did. That was her thing, sort of.
To pull one out of Brian. And unlike the covered nipples in Brian's story, my story, there were no covered nipples. But they had another business right next door to them.
We'll just leave that out for the Wendy O. Williams mentality.
She's not hot.
That's a little later.
Regardless of those, regardless of clothespins, she's still not that. It was a little later in her life. So he's next door to this one strip club. They had another art gallery where you could sketch the naked models. There was no alcohol there because you can't have alcohol at an art gallery. But the models could get totally nude at every table, and this was just the front, so they could do whatever they wanted.
And
every table there was like a little pieces of paper about the size of a slip to fill out for the slip you get for a lotto machine, and like the little tiny pencils you use to fill in your scores in golf.
What?
You could sketch the models. That's how they got around the law.
My God.
That's how they got around the law. This was not a strip club. This was an art house.
It's an art class.
Yeah, an art class. So this is what she's doing, huh?
That's her gig, man. She's in the...
Well, that makes her look a little bit better.
Yeah, I showed you a later picture, but... all right, enough.
No, go ahead.
You
start reading cards again.
All right, well, 1977, Rod becomes Wendy's manager, right?
Who does?
Rod Swenson,
Yale
grad. The guy doing the art?
Yeah.
Right, the artist.
All right.
So he becomes Wendy's manager, right? And he decides he's going to form a punk band around Wendy. And it's called the Plasmatics.
Ugh.
All right, put my phone down.
All right.
So now the Plasmatics.
Why is it all sticky, Brian?
Because you were just looking at Wendy O. Williams' naked pictures, Ben.
She wasn't naked in one of them, though, was she? She wasn't?
Never naked at all.
I mean, you could see.
We'll get there.
Yeah.
We'll get there. The Plasmatics, let's get into them real quick. We'll get there. The Plasmatics. It's a New York City punk and heavy metal band. They came up in the punk scene with, like, the Dead Boys and Patti Smith and the Ramones.
Mm-hmm.
All before those guys were cool, they were all playing around these spots downtown, and the Plasmatics were there. Wednesday, July 26, 1978, at CBGB's. You've heard of that?
Yeah, oh yeah.
That's a rock and roll club in Manhattan's East Village. All right, do you know what CBGB stands for?
I've heard. I don't know. I can't. You tell me.
Country, Bluegrass, and Blues.
Oh, is it really?
Yep.
Oh, maybe I haven't heard that.
So they got the three-piece Plasmatics down there in South Manhattan, about to open up on CBGB's for the first time ever on a Wednesday night. And there's only three of them because, you know, they didn't have time to get a fourth person yet. Another dude, this guy, Grotty, comes in and starts playing guitar. Anyway, not the point. But because there's so few people on stage, visuals become super important to the Plasmatics.
Okay.
So they quickly race to the top of the punk scene because people in New York are like, oh, my God, you should see this. These guys are crazy on stage. This girl's basically naked and screaming and singing because it's kind of heavy, man. I listen to a lot of it, and it's throaty stuff.
Well, it's punk, and she was attractive in her earlier years.
Very soon, they start playing four nights in a row, two sold-out shows a night, lines around the block. And they grew out of being able, like, they filled CBGB's to capacity so much to where they're like, we can't do this anymore.
Is that still a place down there?
It's still big.
I mean, yep. I see the T-shirts, people wearing, you know, bumper sticker. Not wearing bumper, yeah.
Just bumper stickers. Yeah. We'll get there.
Yeah, you got to see a CBGB bumper sticker and then, like, the Wall Drug bumper sticker.
Exactly.
You know.
Are we at Wall Drugs yet? The stage show included shotguns, like inside, they'd fire off some shotguns and stuff. They had exploding TVs that they would blow up on stage. And then a thing that became popular is they would chainsaw their guitars in half and then throw the two pieces out to the crowd.
Chainsawed guitars.
Yeah.
What kind? I mean, electric chainsaws, you think?
No, not then, man. It's the 70s. There's gas-powered chainsaws.
Well, I'm sure they have gas-powered. Why don't they have electric-powered?
Because it's the 70s.
Well, wouldn't that get a lot of, like, smoke in the... Like,
yeah,
that's a two-cycle, man.
Punk, dude.
That's probably before it had to be mixed 50-1. It was probably at 25-1.
Anarchy. This guy, Jim Faber, he's a UK pop rock newspaper that he runs. It's called Sound.
Blew smoke out the back of the chainsaw. I'm sure about this.
All right, check this out. He said, quote, lead singer, ex-porn star, / current weightlifter, Wendy O. Williams, spends most of the Plasmatic show fondling her family-sized breast, scratching her sweaty snatch, and eating the drum kit, among other playful events. End quote.
Hold on. Back up. How'd they describe her breasts?
Family-sized. I thought that was good, too.
I have got to work that into my everyday usage.
You got that family-sized breast over there.
I mean, I'm a pig, just like every other dude out there.
Now, 1979 rolls along. Wendy gets a part in a movie.
What?
What kind of movie, Ben?
A porn movie?
Ben, Wendy stars in Candy Goes to Hollywood.
Oh, so she just... He also described her as a porn.
Well, that's because I think maybe the strip dancing and the dominatrix sex show stuff.
So
I mean,
she was just like, you want to call me a porn actress?
I'm being
a porn actress. I will go that way.
So the premise of Candy Goes to Hollywood, you've seen it. Tell everybody what it is.
She goes to Hollywood. Yeah, probably bangs her way up the Hollywood ladder.
They're doing a fake gong show kind of premise. Like, acts would come out and people would like, oh, this is good or bad. Now, Wendy does an act where she shoots ping pong balls across the room out of her vagina.
So, you know the last episode that we did with, who was our with James Brown. At the beginning of that episode, they talked about a Bucks party.
Buck dance,
Buck
dance, that's right.
And I said I was at a Bucks party in Australia, two minutes off the plane, this is where the guy's taking me.
Yes, you did.
That's exactly what they were doing there.
Ew.
I swear to God it was.
Ew.
I walked in, and it was just a bar. Like, picture skipped, Brian. A public bar. And they rented out the back half of the bar. There's no wall. And they had strippers and stuff doing a multiple different. This guy must have had money or strippers are cheap in Australia. I don't know. But at one point, the girl, ping pong balls. And I've been to some.
Heads up.
Oh, and then the funniest thing at the end of this story, they got the groom to be.
Oh,
they got him totally naked, and two strippers beat the crap out of him in a pool of Jello. Oh my! They were mean.
Wow!
They beat, and he couldn't. He's like, oh, I didn't know this. Bam! They're ripping his. They ripped all of his clothes off. He thought that was funny until they yanked all of his underwear off.
Oh,
and he's
yeah.
They're just. I mean, they're beating on him hard, and he did not think that was funny anymore. But all of his buddies are pushing him.
God.
All right, I've seen the ping pong ball thing. It's amazing.
Wow. The wildest bachelor party I went to, they did. The guys had, like, deer skinning knives, and they stripped this dude's clothes off and then tarred and feathered him. So they used Karo syrup instead of tar, but...
Yeah, I wasn't there for that one.
No, Ryan was with me.
Yeah. Whose was that?
I think his name was Handsome Jason or something like that.
Mole J? Was it Mole J?
No, it was Attractive Jason or Handsome Jason as to distinguish him from the other Jason. Sorry, buddy. Wait, I'm not Handsome Jason? What are you talking about? Damn it!
I guess I could have a lot of nicknames. Handsome Jason's been taken.
Yeah. About her past as a porn star, Wendy said, quote, it was just like working in a donut shop, except you didn't wear a paper hat.
I like that. Yeah.
1979, the Plasmatics become the first band to headline New York's Palladium Theater without a recording contract. They're unsigned.
So they're the first band to go to the Palladium or the first unsigned band to
unsigned band to go to the Palladium. They sold out 3,300 seats, and they blew up a Cadillac on stage.
That's cool.
Yeah. And with that, because I said blowing up a Cadillac, we're going to take a quick break. We'll go back to the story of Wendy, O. Williams.
Wendy O. Williams. It's like a tragic, it's like a little bit of a tragic song.
I'm trying to set a mood for her terrible choices in life and being a sex stripper dominatrix ping pong ball shooter.
There's a whole different kind of beer pong out there I'm unaware of.
And we're back. I was back. I don't know why you're not back.
No, that's a sad little song. Why do we play that song? Can we not play that song anymore?
All right. We can get rid of the sad piano song. There goes the sad piano song.
Oh, it's gone. And it's gone.
And it's gone. No more sad piano for Ben.
And it's gone.
It's gone. All right. You ready?
Yeah.
This is another one. This is where Wendy gets gone.
Can we play some upbeat music?
Oh, just real quick?
Yeah. Dun, 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 dun. All right, I'm back. Good. All right.
All right. We're back. glad. I do. I want you up. This is a good thing. We're talking about a sexy woman who doesn't wear any clothes on stage. I figure that's right up your alley.
All right. And I feel like that piano music might be needed later.
We do need it later. January 1981, Milwaukee, Wisconsin, at the Palms nightclub. Wendy is arrested.
For drugs and indecent exposure.
On an obscenity charge.
Okay.
Now, she simulated fellatio and masturbation with a sledgehammer on stage.
So she's grinding on a piece of it, yeah.
No, she was inserting it in things from what I read.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. She might have had some clothes on, but so that's what the quote simulated was. But she was, yeah. She's wanking off on stage.
Parents must be so proud.
The Milwaukee Vice Squad got tipped off about Wendy's show from an article in the Milwaukee Sentinel a few days earlier. Like, hey, this girl's coming to town and you should see what she does.
Hey, Bob, I hear there's some diner downtown that only hires big-breasted women. We better go check this out.
We gotta go check this out. While arresting Wendy, she alleges the officer grabbed her in a sexual manner, so she slapped him.
What do you mean sexual manner for her? It's anything.
See, they whip 90% naked Wendy to the ground, pin her there, and then start kicking her in the head.
That her is sexual, I guess.
Yeah, right? Well, and remember, it's January in, Wisconsin, so there's snow on the ground.
She's 90% naked?
Basically. I mean, you've seen pictures of Wendy Williams. That's
so I can assume I know what the 10% that was covered was.
We'll get there.
A couple pieces of electrical tape.
No, you're ruining it. All right. And then her manager, Rod, Captain Kink, he jumps in to help out Wendy. The cops beat his ass. Audience members also get in on the arrest. They start throwing stuff at the cops. They get some ass whoopings handed out. Wendy said the officers told her, quote, "We don't like your kind in Milwaukee. I bet you got a weird sex life."
You can't even imagine.
Wendy said, quote, "My face is sore. My chest is sore. My arms are sore. I'm sore all over. I was afraid I was dead in Milwaukee. I was afraid they were just going to open fire, just start shooting."
Yeah, well, it sounds like they probably weren't too far away from it.
Right? All charges were dropped on Wendy and Rod when pictures surfaced of the cops kicking Wendy and pinning her down in the snow.
I guess this is in where?
Milwaukee, Wisconsin.
Yeah, Milwaukee does not mean the good land in, for Wendy, does it?
No. As we said, Rod, he's not like he was up on obstruction charges. They dropped that too.
Milwaukee,
land of many lakes. Wendy O. Williams invented the electrical tape over the nipples look. That was her. Nobody had done that before her. Like you said, that's the thing. So Pink, Miley Cyrus, Christina Aguilera, all these posers.
Owe it to Wendy.
Late to the party. That's Wendy. So when she's being assaulted by cops, just literally imagine her wearing a thong panty and having nipple tape covers. Sometimes, as you saw in the pictures, she's literally wearing clothespins on her nipples, and that counts as nipple coverage.
Coverage.
So Wendy started it all.
I feel like if you had a clothespin on your nipple, it could just, like, pop off. Just, like, bink, bink, you know, just pop off.
I guess it depends on your nipple.
At least the tape is adhered on, where that's just mechanically being held on. And let's say you, like, stretch your back out and push your boobs out.
Boom,
a little bit.
Pop them
off. I can see it pulling the skin away, and you just go, bing!
I feel like she just had, like, a nice, hearty nipple that could take a pin in, you know?
All right.
The next night, Wendy's in Cleveland, Ohio.
Did she have any kids? Did she breastfeed?
Nope.
Was she a lactivist?
No, she's not, but she is a vegan and a staunch vegetarian.
Well, I think one thing is the other.
Well, there you go.
A vegetarian. Not all vegans are vegetarian. No, not all
vegetarians are vegans. Some of them are smart. Oh. No, she's the next night. She goes to Cleveland, Ohio, right after getting shit-whipped in fucking Milwaukee. She gets acquitted of an obscenity charge because she was simulating sex on stage wearing only shaving cream. How did she get acquitted? She covered her nipples with electrical tape to avoid arrest.
Yeah, that's
illegal. They're like, hey, you can't do that. That shaving cream doesn't count as coverage. And she's like, hold on. How's that? And they're like, good enough. Continue on.
But she'd be well received in the Bible Belt.
Oh, dude. 1981, during shooting of an appearance on SCTV. You remember what that is? Second City Television?
Yeah.
The Saturday Night Live of Chicago?
Yeah.
All right. The studio head said they wouldn't air Wendy unless she covered her nipples.
Well, she was always covering her nipples.
Well, no, she had like a shirt on where just the nipple holes were cut out, and like you could see like her whole boob, and she's like, I'm not covering it. Wendy refused. So the show's makeup artist painted Wendy's whole boob black, and then problem solved. Like, you don't have to wear a shirt, boop, black.
Everybody can, it's a win-win situation.
There you go. November 1981 in Illinois, Wendy is jogging, because Wendy ran about 6 miles a day. She was a health nut. Yep. She's jogging outside the Chicago lakefront, and this, quote, freelance photographer, what we now call paparazzi, tried taking her picture. Like, snapping pictures of her, right? Because I imagine she probably didn't jog in much, to be honest. Wendy attacked him.
Yeah.
She gets 1 year probation and a $35 fine.
Ooh, $35.
Well, back in 81.
Oh, it's still only $35. I think I had $35 in 81.
This chick's a little more hardcore. Like, you're getting that, right?
Yeah, she's for real. I don't think she's a poser.
She is for real. In the video for her song, The Damned, which is an aggressive song, rah, 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 you know, Wendy drives a school bus through a wall of TVs that explode. Then she has to climb onto the roof of the bus while it's moving, loaded with explosives, sings for a little bit, jumps off seconds before the bus crashes through a second wall of exploding TVs, and Wendy does all of her own stunts.
Wow.
She also hung beneath a helicopter on a ladder just to get a couple of good shots, too, so that it was cool.
That is cool.
Yeah, no stunt people. Wendy is a badass. She is really cool, actually, as far as, like, empowerment and, like, I can do it, too. And I don't know. Would you do
Sounds like she not only did it, she did it better.
Would you do that with the male artist? Would you make him? And they're like, well, you're not. She's like, I'm doing it. So
yeah, well, I don't think they'd do it with any artist, but she did it.
1982, Wendy sings a version of country classic Stand By Your Man.
Oh, yeah?
With Lemmy of Motorhead.
A couple of those pictures you were scrolling through, he was in there. Yeah.
You're like, yeah.
I know that guy.
I've heard of him. 1984, excellent Van Halen album.
If he didn't wear the cowboy hat, you'd never know him, though.
Oh, no. That's his thing.
Yeah. He just looked like my dad's buddy, Chris.
Lemmy. Sorry. Lemmy. I thought I knew you. I did. 1984, Wendy releases the Wow album, because Wendy O. Williams, album. Now it's produced by Gene Simmons of Kiss.
Oh, well, yeah.
Also, Paul Stanley, Ace Frehley, Eric Carr, and Vinnie Vincent make performances on the album for Wendy.
We'll sit in on the Wendy O. Williams bus.
Now,
Not the one with the explosives.
No, you got to get off of that. Gene Simmons plays bass under the name Reginald Van Helsing on the album.
Oh, really?
So, just to put the Gene Simmons twist in there.
What an idiot.
1985. Jeez, Doc. Wendy spends 6 months starring in St. Louis's Westport Playhouses presents the Rocky Horror Picture Show.
I feel like she fit right in there.
It seems like, you already came in costume. That's your street clothes. All right. Well, don't even bother changing. You're good.
She probably just showed up one day to watch it, and they just mistook her for one of the cast and put her on stage. She did great.
You're late. Get up here. The national
hold some popcorn. You're going to need it.
Unfortunately, the national tour fell through.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh.
1986, Wendy stars in another movie.
Yeah?
What is it?
Another porno?
Nah, it's an indie film called Reform School Girls. It's about Reform School Girls. It's what you think it is. It's not a porn, but it's like the National Lampoon sort of. You've seen Reform School Girls, haven't you?
I think it's on Amazon.
You perv.
The show's not going anywhere until I check this out.
Oh, dude. Are you going to put it in your favorites?
No. I was just
perusing.
No, I was looking.
Keep your hands above the table. Now, here's the thing, though. It's Reform School Girls, 1986, but Wendy and her manager, like, they didn't like the film right after it came out. They didn't really want to do it in the first place, but the producers of the movie wanted to use three of Wendy's new songs as the soundtrack, and so they cut a deal, and they're like, you can be in the movie. And she's like, oh, okay, I guess.
No, it wasn't the one.
Now, if you're on Amazon, feel free to look up Space Boobs from Space. That's an excellent TV show, that low-quality C or D-level TV. Yeah, I'm sure you have.
No, I've never seen that.
All right. Well, speaking of things you've never seen, 1987, Wendy has a part-time spot on the TV show The New Adventure of Beans Baxter.
Oh, I thought you were saying New Adventure of Briscoe whatever. What was that one thing?
Briscoe County Jr.
New Adventures of Briscoe County Jr.?
Yeah, with Bruce Campbell.
Of course Bruce Campbell.
Why would you not have Bruce Campbell?
I can't believe he's not here today.
Campbell Soup is an excellent soup. Bruce Campbell is an excellent actor.
John Campbell might have been a country singer.
I don't think
it was John Campbell.
Glenn Campbell. We'll get there.
Yeah.
1988, the last time the Plasmatics will tour. Wendy then puts out a solo album. It's a thrash rap style album. So she invents metal rap.
Metal rap.
Metal rap.
All right.
It's called The Deafest and Baddest. And she didn't call herself Wendy O. Williams. She had to go by the name Ultrafly and the Hometown Girls.
Ultrafly. Some of these names. Some of the names are so scary today. You hear them and they're like, oh my gosh, that guy must be a really good rapper because I'm scared of his name. And back then, I'm thinking the names are just as intimidating. But now listening to some of those names are like, that's so stupid.
Little Flip, Little Yachty, Little Nas X. Those are scary to you?
Well, I don't know. The world
Little
scares
Wayne.
Me. I can barely leave my house in the morning. I'm scared all the time. But those names are going to scare you in like 20 years? I don't think so. I'm going to be laughing at them.
Ben's afraid to leave his house. Ben watches the news. 1991, Wendy doesn't watch the movie. Well, she might because she moves to a very peaceful place, Connecticut.
It's for rich people.
Her and Rod, a.k.a. Captain Kink, live in a geodesic dome in Connecticut.
Oh, geodesic dome. Buckmeister Fuller.
She worked as an animal rehabilitator and then at a food co-op.
Buckmeister or Buckminster?
Buckminster.
Buckminster.
You can go to the Henry Ford Museum and walk around a Buckminster Fuller dome house or one of those spaceship houses.
The thing in Disney was one.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, Epcot.
Epcot.
When you went to grade school with a kid who lived in a geodesic dome.
Who? You can't say his name.
I'll edit it. I'm the editor.
He had it.
It was a geodesic dome over by the don't you remember? Yeah.
Really? What about his big house there?
Before that, that's when they were building that house. That's where they lived. They didn't always live in a
I have no idea.
Anyway.
Dude, Matt likes and his a lot and his wife.
I wanted to see him fight, and at our high school reunion, he had some aggression from high school. He's gonna go fight. So he's like, I want to punch that dude in the face.
Who is he gonna punch?
I'm not gonna say because that might actually get around. This will heart will be heavily
at,
edited.
At when? At the reunion?
Yeah, we all went to after the high school
I was
reunion.
There.
There's some people across.
I mean, I didn't go to your high school, but I was there.
I know. And drinking, and he's just like, I can't believe you showed up here. I'm gonna punch him in the face, man. He's like, I hate that kid. I hate that kid so much.
You gotta tell
him. And then we kept getting like drinks, and we're like, do it. And he didn't do it though. But
write it down.
Funny, what?
Who was it?
It's
oh, everybody wants to beat.
Yeah, and now he's. So why would you not want to beat him up? It's the one thing he did to make sure he couldn't get his ass kicked anymore.
I feel like he always had that look on his face, like
a rat. What?
I
didn't do anything. What? My friends are cool. My parents have a lot of money. What? 1991, Wendy gets the same kind of attitude. She moves to Connecticut with Rod.
What?
Oh, Wendy said she was pretty fed up with dealing with people.
Dude, I get that.
That's why she moved to Connecticut. She's like, I'm tired of dealing with people.
By the way, been to Connecticut?
Yeah, I've been to Connecticut.
There's people there.
Got family live there.
You should go to fucking Wyoming.
Nobody. I don't think it exists.
Nobody goes to it. There's nobody in Wyoming.
Wyoming and Vermont and Hawaii. Just listen to our podcast once. Don't even listen. Just download it.
Honestly, I don't think Wyoming has their own IP address or something.
No Wi-Fi in Wyoming.
No.
Well, no Wi-Fi for Wendy because in 1993 she tries killing herself by hammering a knife through her chest.
That is boss.
Now, the knife gets lodged in Wendy's sternum, so she changes her mind and has Rod take her to the hospital. Tink, tink, tink.
I wouldn't do
I don't
that.
I
would try to get between a rib right here by the heart. If you're going to make it, go. Yeah.
She just wanted to go through the middle, right up the center, right up the gut.
You ever try to cut through a sternum?
Oh, dude. That's a chunky piece of bone right there.
I mean, especially if you're, like, older. It's hard.
You just got to go to the side on the ribs just to be easier.
No, ribs are hard. At least.
Yeah, but you're not going through that straight up sternum.
Oh, yeah, you got to go between ribs.
1997, Wendy, not one to give up. She tries again with the suicide. She tries overdosing on ephedrine, and they find her and they save her.
Ephedrine. Which one's that? Is that just an opiate?
I think.
I have no idea.
I don't know. Githron, get on it. April 6, 1998, Wendy, age 48, dies of a self-inflicted gunshot wound. Ron came home, found a box that Wendy left out for him. Got, like, noodles and stuff in it that he liked, and a packet of seeds to grow some garden greens, some massage balm that was good for him, and then a bunch of sealed letters from her.
Huh.
And so Rod's like, oh, shit. And he started searching around.
Found her.
Finds her body out in the woods. She was apparently feeding some squirrels right before. And as well as Wendy was cool, as we said. She put a bag over her head before she did anything so Rod didn't have to see like the whole messed up scene and stuff. So
she wanted to go.
Yeah.
She. I wonder if she had demons her entire life, and
I don't know,
that's
man.
What drove her to do the crazy things she did.
She had some extreme behavior.
Yeah, that's sad. I'm sad. Yeah. Where's that piano at now?
Yeah, well, that's why we erased the said piano. It's no longer there.
I've been sad.
We do have a quote from Wendy. This might maybe make you feel better.
Now I don't want to look at her naked anymore.
Oh, all right. We got a quote. Do I have to use my feet? Can I knock the window out with my head? Wendy Orlean Williams.
I like to think of her knocking the window out of a bus with her head.
With her head.
Right? Yeah.
Well, that brings us to the end of Wendy O. Williams.
Wendy O. Williams. Wow. I didn't know about her.
What'd you think?
That was a quick'un.
Yeah, that's a fast one. But did you like did you like the whole sexy girl story? I mean,
I like the sexy girl story, and it doesn't sound like she ever really. I mean, she got into some fights with some people.
Yeah,
but she wasn't a bad person at all.
No, she was just a little.
James Brown was beating every wife he had up.
That's true.
You know, and the guy with the crack pipe burns, and the farting in the face guy, and the other people that are just like shooting people and stuff, and she's. That's a sad story.
Well, she just goes down for that whole obscene thing in Milwaukee. It's her big
FYI, stupid.
And then cops whipping her to the ground.
Prudes in Milwaukee.
Yeah, that's right. It was really just a shout out to the prudes in Milwaukee.
The prudes. I don't know the prudes anymore. I don't know. But back then, there were a lot of different laws on the books.
Right.
And, you know, hey there, son.
We don't like your kind around here. And whatever your kind would be.
Naked hot chicks running around?
You don't like naked hot chicks?
Huh.
That's a weird space.
All right, dudes, get naked. Yeah, they like naked dudes.
Yeah. Are you ready for this?
Well, I don't know what this is.
Wait, well, that's the whole argument. It's like, do you like big penises, Ben?
Absolutely, I do.
There you go, right? Because when guys go, no, I don't like big penises, you go, some movie did this. It's like, well, when you're watching porn, you want the guys to have a little dick? No, I want them to have a big dick. You're like, well, you like big penises then?
I don't like any penises. I don't even really care for mine, man.
Yeah.
Well, Nobody does, Brian.
That's why I said you like big penises. Yeah. Anyway. All right, guess what? We got some feedback. It's actually not feedback. This is an interesting one. Because we're talking about the Plasmatics in New York City and the punk scene.
Yeah.
My wife has a relative we call Uncle Chris.
Is Uncle Chris behind the curtain right now?
Uncle Chris ready to come out of the curtain back? Nope, he's not here.
Oh,
so,
I was dude, we got somebody coming in. I don't know. I'm ready. Like in my jiu-jitsu stance here.
Ben knows his karate. Not his crazy.
Uncle Chris is going to pop out where the dogs keep running. And the curtains are moving because there's a fan going.
Uncle Chris happened to be a musician in the 70s and lived in New York.
Now, hold on. Let's just back up real quick. Uncle Chris is literally related to your wife's uncle.
Correct.
Yeah. Your cousin,
but whatever.
Okay.
So Uncle Chris was an actual musician back in the 70s in New York City. He played with people like the New York Dolls and like some punk bands and stuff. He's credited with playing tambourine on some albums and singing backup and playing keyboards and guitars.
Okay.
I had a chance to run into Uncle Chris, and because we're talking about the Plasmatics, he wanted me to talk about or tell me about Johnny Thunders.
Johnny Thunders.
Do you know who Johnny Thunders is?
No, he sounds like a wrestler.
Johnny Thunders is a prominent 1970s musician, a guitarist known for being a member of the New York Dolls, and later he plays with the Heartbreakers. But Uncle Chris wanted to tell us...
Like Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers?
Correct. So Uncle Chris was telling us the story of Johnny Thunders and how he died. So
we got recordings of
we'll check
Uncle.
This out.
All right, Johnny Thunders, but the New York Dolls were like the first true glam rock beginning of the punk rocks era. Right? The New York Dolls used to play at Max's Kansas City all the time. Well, I was running a club in the East Village called the Continental Divide. Now, we would have Walter Lohr would play Thursday nights. Johnny Thunders had Tuesday nights, and their job was we paid them X amount of money. They got a warm-up band, or they had, you know, and they all got paid. The reality was we were keeping half these guys who were has-beens like Sylvain, Johnny Thunders, you know, Walter Lohr, alive by letting them come in and eat against their pay for the night they work. So Johnny Thunders would basically have come in every night for dinner because these guys are all running smack. They're drugged out of their minds. It's kind of sad, but we actually had these icons of rock and roll in our little shitty club on 3rd Avenue in St. Mark's Place. So now Thunders played Tuesday night. Turns out his whole frickin' band got fed up with his shit. So, you know, just, and I'm sitting there with my bartender, Rick, and Thunders is now down in the dressing room, and he looks like a little rat fuck. He's the only way I can see, it's like that little rat fucking chippy fucking look on him. And he's a little nasty, with all the druggy pimples and shit on his face. You know what that look? So he's got his girlfriend's coming out, and she's carrying his guitar. Now, the dressing room's downstairs, so you got to go through the kitchen to come out. Now, my chef for the night had taken out all the frozen chicken for the next day. So you got 8 trays of frozen chicken breasts all laid out downstairs, and they're going to thaw. And by the morning time, they're just about right to go in the fridge. The girlfriend comes out with the guitar, and I'm looking at it like, okay, that's kind of weird. Where's the guitar case? Johnny Thunders comes out. He's with the guitar case, and he's leaning over like it's the frickin' iceberg. He's carrying it. And behind the guitar case is a trail of chicken breasts coming up the stairs, out the kitchen, and walking across
like
the club.
Or something?
He's stealing all my chicken.
So
he's stealing like $300 worth of chicken breasts at wholesale. So I'm like, okay. I go, this is going to be fun. And Rick's like, I got to watch how you do this one. I go, Johnny, what's going on? You get paid. He had this, like I said, a little rat fuck. I go, okay, well, let me see how much chicken you got in your case there. What are you talking about? Okay, I'm making it up, but open your case and we'll deduct the chicken you're stealing from me for your pay. So this is how I had to deal with Johnny Thunders on a weekly basis. Now, 6 months later, now Johnny Thunders, you're talking icon of rock and roll. He really was one of these great musicians that set a precedence. A guy came over from London. He wanted to hire, he comes in the Continental, he knows Thunders plays here. So he says, I'm looking for Johnny Thunders, and how do I get a hold of him? I go, okay, what you do? You go down the second street between C and D, across the street from the nightclub The World, and there's a Country Squire station wagon that's up on blocks, and it's got newspaper in the window. He goes, yeah, what about that? Well, he lives there. He goes, what? I go, yeah, you know, swear to God, he lives there. And now Rick was working. He's coming into the evening shift. So the guy's like, you're out of your fucking mind. I go, no, he really lives in the car. 2 hours later, this guy comes back. He goes, and I look at him, and Rick goes like, he's back. I go, what's the matter? He goes, give him a beer, Rick. Tell us what happened. He goes, well, I didn't believe you. I thought you were full of shit. So I go down there anyway. I go in this, there's this car, Country Squire station wagon. I like the really ugly green color. Remember the hideous wood paneling on the side of those pieces of shit? And there's all these newspapers on it. He goes, it's up on blocks. So I kind of knock on the door, like, and from inside a woman's voice is, who is it? He's like, my God, there's somebody in there. He goes, I'm looking for Johnny Thunders. Is he home? I don't know, let me check. He's like, what the fuck is going on? He's got a wine cellar in the trunk? I mean, it's a fucking station wagon. I have to check.
Where could he be?
Yeah, absolutely. Like, he goes,
he's in the guest room.
Yeah, he's in the guest room. He's in the south wing.
Let me go out to the foyer.
So Thunder's finally, you know, all the rustling around and all the junky kind of noises and shit going on. He finally crawls out of the car. So he's leaning against the car. You ever see the junkie lean when they're still high? They're like, and they just kind of, they lean, and they don't really fall down, and they go the other way. So he's trying to talk to him. He goes, what do you want? He goes, look, I got a gig for you in London. We're going to help you record an album. And he says all this shit. He goes, so Thunderstyle starts laying out, well, I want this and that, and I want a hotel, and I want this. And he's trying to get his writer in his contract. He goes, look, asshole, I'm going to give you a meal and a shower and give you money for it. So that's how Johnny Thunders went to England and made his last record. Now, a month after Johnny got back, he shows up in town. He's got a wad of cash. He looks like a pimp cash. You know, he's got the just 20s and 50s and 100s. It's just a lot of money.
With a rubber band.
But exactly. He never paid any of us fucking back for anything. Nothing. And then he goes down and, you know, he comes in the bar and he's Mr. Big Shooter. And like, you know, you're not playing here anymore, asshole. You stole my chicken.
I can go anywhere I want now.
So he goes down to New Orleans. They found him 2 days later, face down in a pile of his own vomit. I contributed to the death of Johnny Thunders, and I'm proud of it.
Stories from Uncle Chris, everybody.
I'd like to hear a couple other stories from Uncle Chris. Has he got a couple?
He's got a couple, yeah. He was in the scene back then, man, and he ran clubs and played in bands, like I'm saying.
So, you and your wife were hanging out on the weekend, or on the 4th of July,
He has a massive 4th of July party. They drop like $7,000 on fireworks for just them. They're on this nice little lake up on the west side of Michigan.
Oh, really?
And yeah, man, that was intense.
Where at? Where at?
I think it's called Leech Lake, I believe.
Oh, where? What city?
Oh man, I don't remember. Outside, here.
Okay, over by Grand Rapids area.
There you go. Yeah, right. Yeah. Battle Creek, kind of up in that area, is like the close town.
So that's where he lives. You guys were out there hanging out, and he was just regaling you with some old stories of yesteryear.
Yeah, he knows I do the podcast, and he's given me tons of contacts in the Detroit area, like MC5 and stuff like that, these local, like these bigger bands that made it farther and stuff. People are still around and he knows them. He's friends with them on Facebook.
And recap, who was Johnny Thunder in relation?
Johnny Thunders is the guitar player for the New York Dolls.
And the New York Dolls had
influential sort of punk rock band back in the 70s.
Okay. All right.
So
did the New York Dolls brush elbows with Wendy?
I'm sure they were in the same place at the same
lot,
time.
Doing a lot in the same town,
absolutely.
Doing the same
you're
stuff.
You're in the same area. You're in the same world. I'm not going to find exact examples of
and
that.
And Johnny, this Thunder guy, who this is like a mini podcast and a short podcast.
Yeah, right?
That's a little bit. So he was in the Heartbreakers?
Yeah, he was in the Heartbreakers after the New York Dolls, but more famously for the New York Dolls.
But he was the Heartbreakers, as in Tom Petty and the...
Yeah, that's the way I understand it.
I'd feel like that's more popular than the...
Yeah, but if it's like when John Mayer sets in with the like the Grateful Dead remnants and stuff, it's not really playing with the Grateful Dead, you know?
Well, he played with Tom Petty.
Well, yeah, that's it. I mean, the band formed in New York before, I don't know if you know this, but the Heartbreakers formed in 75 before Tom Petty. So I feel like he was before Tom Petty playing in the Heartbreakers.
Ah, gotcha, okay.
And then the Heartbreakers, Tom Petty's like, that's a good backup band, y'all with me now. Now it's Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers, you know, like one of those things. So
like
he was
James
in the
Brown and the Voodoo Kids or whatever.
The JBs and all that stuff. Right, right, right. He would just, the Flames and the Swannies, and just like, these are musicians. They're great. Now they're on my side. They're with me.
The Magic Band.
The Magic Band. Yeah. Right. So I thought that was great, though.
No,
man.
that was thank you to cousin.
Uncle Chris.
Uncle Chris. Cousin Chris. Uncle.
Cousin Uncle.
Uncle
Chris.
Cousin.
That's true. He's a cousin, but anyway.
Will he listen to this?
Possibly.
All right. If you do, shout out. Thank you. That was fun.
That was awesome.
Man, I could listen to a couple of those stories.
Absolutely could listen
to
a couple of those stories.
He sounds like he has a bit of an East Coast accent.
He's a Detroiter, born and raised.
Yeah,
that's for sure.
Yeah, but he spent some time out in New York, you said.
He did. He's got some New York formative years for sure.
Yeah, there's some Joe Pesci or something mixed up.
He can tell a story, you know.
Okay.
He's been a bartender, been a musician, been a performer. He's done it all.
Cool.
So.
What'd he do now?
I don't know.
Sits on a lake, lights off fireworks.
Yep, he's got a great fireworks display on 4th of July. That's what I know. So,
right.
Because we said fireworks display on 4th of July, that's it for this episode of Crime and Music. If you want to reach out, hit us on social medias. Go to our website, crimeandmusic.com. Scroll down twice, leave a speak pipe. We'll play on there. If you've got any questions about Johnny Thunders, Wendy O. Williams, the Plasmatics, the Heartbreakers, Tom Petty, and more, go to our website or give us a message and we'll look into it specifically for you. As they say, never trust a big butt and a smile.
Tootsie roll. Tootsie roll. We'll be right back.
It's NFL draft season, and that means it's time to start thinking about fantasy football. FantasyPoints.com features industry-leading experts and prognosticators using proprietary hand-charted data to help you score more fantasy points. FantasyPoints.com is the place to go for whatever kind of fantasy football you play. Whether you play fantasy football, daily fantasy sports, or do a little bit of everything, Fantasy Points has the meticulously researched content to guide you to victory. And why wait for the fall? Fantasy Points also covers the new spring football league, the UFL. Join the guru, John Hansen, Scott Barrett, Joe Dolan, and other massive names in the fantasy football universe with an exclusive offer. Use code Pantheon for 15% off any Fantasy Points package, including the all-in package, with access to every article, tool, and data nugget that Fantasy Points has to offer. That's FantasyPoints.com and code Pantheon for 15% off at Fantasy Points. FantasyPoints.com, code Pantheon. Score more fantasy points.